Jaya Radama Dhavakunja Bihari Gopiranna Vallabha Girivada Dhari Jaya Radama Dhavakunja Bihari Gopiranna Vallabha Girivada Dhari Yashoda Nanana Vajajana Ranjana Yashoda Nanana Vajajana Jamuna Tira Vanna Chari Jamuna Tira Vanna Chari Jaya Ratta Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Ganna Balata Giri Vardada Yashoda Nanana Vrajajana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanna Chari Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Jaya Radhe Shyam Jaya Radhe Shyam Radhe Shyam Jaya Radhe Shyam Jaya Krishna Balaram Krishna Balaram Krishna Balaram Jaya Krishna Balaram
How glorious are some of the devotees? How glorious are some of the devotees? How glorious are some of the devotees? Glory to Shiva and Shiva. Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're continuing in Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 16, how Parikshit received the age of Kali. Yesterday we read a very long purport. I was asked to speak on only part of it, so I'll read the translation once again, and then I'll start on the 14th quality. Mount Vishnu that I can stab it is not about the end, so on the stairs. This is the translation. In him reside truthfulness, cleanliness, intolerance of another's unhappiness, the power to control anger, self-satisfaction, straightforwardness, steadiness of mind, control of the sense organs, responsibility, equality, tolerance, equanimity, faithfulness, knowledge, absence of sense enjoyment, leadership, chivalry, influence, the power to make everything possible, the discharge of proper duty, complete independence, dexterity, fullness of all beauty, serenity, kind-heartedness, ingenuity, and gentility, magnanimity, determination, perfection in all knowledge, proper execution, possession of all objects of enjoyment, joyfulness, immovability, fidelity, fame, worship, pietousness, being as the personality of Godhead, eternity, and many other transcendental qualities which are eternally present and never to be separated from him. That personality of Godhead, the reservoir of all goodness and beauty, Lord Shri Krishna, has now closed his transcendental pastimes on the face of the earth. In his absence, the age of Kali has spread its influence everywhere, so I am sorry to see this condition of existence. So the 14th quality, 14th quality knowledge can be further extended into five subheadings, namely intelligence, gratefulness, power of understanding the circumstantial environments of place, object, and time, perfect knowledge of everything, and the knowledge of the self. Only fools are ungrateful to their benefactors. The Lord, however, does not require benefit from anyone besides himself because he is full in himself. Still, he feels benefited by the unalloyed services of his devotees. The Lord feels grateful to his devotees for such unsophisticated, unconditional service and tries to reciprocate it by rendering service, although the devotee also has no such desire in his heart. The transcendental service of the Lord is itself a transcendental benefit for the devotee, and therefore the devotee has nothing to expect from the Lord. On the assertion of the Vedic aphorism, Sarvam Kalvam Idam Brahma, we can understand that the Lord, by the omnipresent rays of his effulgence called Brahma Jyoti, is all-pervading inside or outside of everything, like the omnipresent material sky, and thus he is also omniscient. As far as the beauty of the Lord is concerned, he has some special features that distinguish him from all other living beings, and over and above that, he has some special attractive, beautiful features by which he attracts the mind of even Radharani, the supermost beautiful creation of the Lord. He is known, therefore, as Madan Mohan, or one who attracts the mind of even Cupid. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhu has scrutinizedly analyzed other transcendental qualities of the Lord and affirms that Lord Shri Krishna is the absolute supreme personality of Godhead, Parabrahman. He is omnipotent by his inconceivable energies, and therefore he is Yogeshwara, or supreme master of all mystic powers. Being the Yogeshwara, his eternal form is spiritual, a combination of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. The non-devotee class cannot understand the dynamic nature of his knowledge because they are satisfied to reach up to his eternal form of knowledge. All great souls aspire to be equal in knowledge with him. This means that all other knowledge is ever insufficient, flexible, and measurable, whereas the knowledge of the Lord is ever fixed and unfathomable. Srila Sutta Goswami affirms in Bhagavatam that although he was observed by the citizens of Dwarka every day, they were ever increasingly anxious to see him again and again. The living beings can appreciate the qualities of the Lord as the ultimate goal, but they cannot attain the status quo of such equality. This material world is a product of the Mahatattva, which is a state of the Lord's dreaming condition in his yoga nidra, mystic slumber in the casual ocean. And yet the whole creation appears to be a factual presentation of his creation. This means that the Lord's dreaming conditions are also factual manifestations. He can therefore bring everything under his transcendental control, and thus whenever and wherever he does appear, he does so in his fullness. The Lord, being all that is described above, maintains the affairs of the creation, and by his so doing, he gives salvation even to the enemies who are killed by him. He is attractive even to the topmost liberated soul, and thus he is worshipable even by Brahma and Shiva, the greatest of all demigods. Even in his incarnation of Purusha Avatar, he is the Lord of the creative energy. The creative material energy is working under his direction, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9:10. He is the control switch of the material energy. And to control the material energy in the innumerable universes, he is the root cause of innumerable incarnations in all the universes. There are more than 500,000 incarnations of Manu in only one universe, besides other incarnations in different universes. In the spiritual world, however, beyond the Mahatattva, there is no question of incarnations, but there are planetary expansions of the Lord in different Vaikunthas. The planets in the spiritual sky are at least three times the number of those within the innumerable universes in the Mahatattva. And all the Narayan forms of the Lord are but expansions of his Vasudeva feature. And thus he is Vasudeva, Narayan, and Krishna simultaneously. He is Sri Krishna, Govinda, Hari, Marari, Hey Nath, Narayan, Vasudeva, all in one. His qualities, therefore, cannot be counted by anyone, however great one may be. So, this is quite the description, a mind-blowing description of God's, some of God's feature. And we're supposed to start on his 14th one. He has innumerable qualities, so like, it sounds funny just starting on his 14th quality. But he is God by all means. Dharma is lamenting the loss of Krishna because Krishna is the reservoir of all good qualities. Everything resides in him. And so now he's left, and the earth is bereft of all of the reservoir of these qualities. And then now Kali and Sin are coming to do you in, as the play goes. And they're doing a good job. They're still at it. And they are pulling everyone in under their mystic power. So it's a little frightening to think that this is just the beginning of Kali Yuga, but Dharma is already experiencing that, yes, very soon we'll rarely find a person that even has one or two of these qualities now that Krishna has left. But Krishna is known as the complete, as we hear some of his completeness. But in the Shirsha Upanishad, it describes that the personality of God is perfectly complete, and because he is completely perfect, all emanations from him, such as the phenomenal world, are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. Whatever is produced of the complete whole is also complete itself. Because he is a complete whole, even though so many complete units emanate from him, he remains the complete balance. So he is everything, and everything is complete because of him. And so therefore we should be convinced by all this knowledge that we find in the Vedas that Krishna is that supreme personality of Godhead. The Vedas really don't leave any secrets. It describes there's so many places where it describes the Supreme Lord. Even like Lord Brahma, where we read in the early morning the prayers, Lord Brahma was doing some austerity to please the Lord, and then Krishna was pleased. He came, shook his hand, gave him a big hug, and then Lord Brahma sings these beautiful prayers describing in particular the Lord's form and all these expansions and these energies, everything that we've heard here in this purport, Lord Brahma sings these glories. And then, of course, Krishna came here just 5,000 years ago, and he exposed many of these qualities. And, of course, they were never forgotten and ultimately written down. And then the deity worship was started, and the instructions were preserved. And, of course, comes and it goes, but it still remains today because of the realizations of the great souls that have actually seen and experienced some of the qualities of the Lord. I know that from the very first day that I came to the temple, I had never even heard the word Krishna before, except I heard the mantra one time. But within a few hours after going to the temple, after meeting the devotees, I see pictures of God. I hear stories. I heard about Lord Sringadev. There were magazines with comics about Krishna. There was some deities which I couldn't even figure out what they were. I thought they were puppets. But anyway, so all this within just a few hours, so much knowledge I received about Krishna. I mean, how could I go away? I mean, this was just like a little tip of the iceberg that I realized that these people know. They know who God is. My answers now are going to be, the answers are going to be there for all my questions. So there was no reason why I should leave. But the non-devotees, they write this off as, oh, this is just, you know, some speculation, or it's just some mythology, or it just goes against all logic and all probability. So it's much easier for me just to be an atheist, because this is impossible. So we find that these atheists are very glad to be in their ignorance, and they really don't even want to hear about the soul or the supreme soul. So again, in Sri Yuksha Upanishad, this person is described. Unfortunate person. The killer of a soul, whoever he may be, must enter into the planets known as the worlds of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. So there they're not only going to be in darkness this lifetime, but for a very long time, they can enjoy their atheism down in those planets. So it's very important that we hear this brilliant Bhagavatam and all these descriptions, because devotees, they relish hearing this. And the more far out it is, like this purport gets more and more far out, it goes into the different universes and the expansions and the Mahapatapa. It's just like, you know, it's way beyond our conception to understand of these qualities of the Supreme Lord. But that's what we like. The devotees like it. The more far out, the better it is. The more we realize that that Krishna is someone to be worshipped and someone to be hankering to find out who he is. My mother would always say, why can't he just wear regular clothes? Why does he have to wear these weird clothes? Why does he have to be that color? You know, so this, it goes against their liking, something that's too different. But for us, the more different, the better. Otherwise, boring. God can't be boring, but God's going to be the most exciting thing. And these qualities that we hear here, they're always increasing. So we're always going to be surprised what Krishna's going to come up with next. And then because he's so far out, we can use these qualities as a challenge to all those frauds that say, oh, I'm God. Okay, let's see your beauty. Oh, sorry, that doesn't make it. You know, your white beard and your falling out teeth, forget it. You know, you don't make it. Or lift over downhill, Pop, I would say. So all these qualities were displayed and are given to us so that all these so-called gods can be scratched off the list. So this is important that we do understand that bhakti is so important because it trains us in humility to accept the Supreme Lord. That by hearing this, we're ready to throw ourselves on the floor and bow down. We really have no other choice, really, if we're intelligent, to realize that this is Krishna. And Prabhupada said, if you can find someone else with more qualities, it's better, than worship him, but you won't find anyone more than Krishna. So bhakti is that training process where we can accept Krishna as our benefactor. He's talking a little bit about benefiting Krishna, as if we're really benefiting Krishna. But he does appreciate that. It's natural that we want to give gifts to someone who is our benefactor, because you just have that natural instinct to want to give, not to always take. Just like during Christmas or any time, you want to give, when you were a child, you wanted to give your parents something in appreciation for their love for you, for taking care of you. And you didn't have any money, so they would give you their money so you could buy them a gift. But it was because they are accepting what? They're accepting that appreciation. They're not accepting what you give them, but they just like to see you thinking about them, even though it might just be the same old socks or tie or belt or whatever that you could think of. So we can afford, we can look in ourselves and afford at least that appreciation, giving back to our benefactor, giving whatever we can all the time. And that's what this bhakti is teaching us. And it is our natural state, Prabhupada said. It naturally comes to want to serve. But Kali Yuga has come in. Kali and Sin are there, and they're very attractive, and they've put everyone to sleep now. That natural state is no longer there. They're sleeping in deep, deep slumber, and they've forgotten this this giving propensity. And to wake it up, well, it actually reminds me of Lord Ramachandra's celebration is coming up. And you know that pastime in Lord Ram, I think maybe Indrajit had gotten killed or something horrible had happened. And so Ravana was in great distress and said, our only way we're going to get out of this is if we get Kumbhakarna. And Kumbhakarna happens to be a real sleepy fellow. And he's a big person and he really sleeps deeply. And so to wake up Kumbhakarna, what did they have to do? They had to get armies to go on top of his body, and infantry people to try to wake him up. That's how big, how much his sleep he was. And so we're like Kumbhakarnas here in the material world, that we need the Sankirtan party to run over us and to wake us up on the streets, wherever we can spread it. Just like at the parade the other day, not so many devotees came out, unfortunately, but it was an opportunity to wake up spirit souls. And you could see that, the Hare Krishnas, oh yeah, we really like them. So this is what it takes, the holy name of the Lord. And this Sankirtan movement should be reverberating the holy names all around the planet, so that it will wake up to its original Krishna consciousness again. So the devotees are realizing, it describes here, that they're indebted to the Lord, but they don't want to do something for something in return. They just really want to serve. And because we owe Krishna a lot. We are indebted for many lifetimes. It's like we've maxed out our credit card. You know, we've gone there and we've been saying, oh, well, I don't really have this money, but I'm calling it mine, and we get more and more in debt, more and more in debt, taking more and more from Krishna all the time. Credit card is so full that we have to come back another lifetime to get it balanced out, and another lifetime. But we can do it in this one lifetime if we take this wonderful, joyful process of giving back to Krishna. And this is a way we can actually show our appreciation. So there's another correlating verse in Sri Upanishad, and it says that one may aspire to live for hundreds of years if he continuously goes on working in that way. For that sort of work will not bind him to the law of karma. There is no alternative to this way for man. So we're learning how to work in bhakti and devotion and giving all the results to Krishna. And we can do this and be free from that debt, because the interest is only going to increase if we don't give back to Krishna. And it could be many, many lifetimes before we get back. So we should realize also that in this purport, the most amazing thing is that, like I was saying, that Krishna is thinking that the devotee is doing so much for me that I should give back to him. And so that puts us in a situation, you know, that's a little uncomfortable, because we don't have that selfish attitude. We want to give, and we want to give more and more. But I was listening to a lecture the other day where actually Papa was saying that when we come to the temple, it's not just for our own benefit, but it actually, Krishna sees it as his benefit. So I was just noticing all that today was more than normal. The parents were bringing their kids into school, before school, to see the deities. What a nice thing to do, that is, to actually get used to coming here and giving some darshan for the Lord. And they like to see them. They like to see all the devotees before they go to school. And they like to see everybody. And then Krishna feels a little obligated, and he can't help but be involved in this process of bhakti. So he wants to give back. And then he wants to give favors. And it does run into some problems. There's always that example of Raghunath Das, when he was wanting to give his brother Sanatana Goswami some really nice prasadam. So he was thinking, oh, I don't really have any bhog or anything. And then some beautiful lady came from the village, said, oh, there's been a wedding, I have so much extra bhoga here, you take it. And so he cooked up a nice feast, and then Sanatana Goswami says, where did you get all this bhoga? You don't have all this stuff. And then he said, oh, this beautiful lady from the village came and gave it to me. And he goes, oh, now you've taken service from Radharani. And so he was feeling, lamenting horribly, oh my gosh, how can I do that? But that wasn't the end of it. There's another incident. If you go there, you can see pictures of the wall with Raghunath Das chanting, and there's a tiger over here looking at him, and it's blazing hot. And so he was always chanting, and Vrindavan was a little dangerous in those times, not only the heat, but the animals, the tigers, and the lions and the bears and everything else. So he was chastised. Now Radharani is coming, having to put an umbrella over your head, keeping you shaded. This is, you're taking her service. Just build yourself a tiny house, will you? Build yourself a little hut and just live in that bhajan kutir. So we are very grateful to Krishna, and we have to be careful that we always have that mood of selfishness and being amazed at how Krishna is so, well, here it's described under the 14th quality of knowledge, that they are wanting to give back. They want to benefit their devotees. So these qualities are all in Krishna, and we should try to imbibe them ourselves. And so then it's another description of Lord Krishna's beauty. Now, beauty has a great influence on us, as far as how we look at people and judge them sometimes. It's a big impression on us. The first says, you know, first impression is by your looks. So beauty is a very powerful quality. And Krishna is full of that beauty. I mean, if you were to pick anyone in the whole world that you've ever seen pictures of or heard of or anything, is there anyone that would compare to Krishna's beauty, that you could put them up next to it? No one, absolutely no one. So we have to come here and relish Krishna's beauty and appreciate that he is the most beautiful thing. His beauty weighs heavy on our souls. We always make us anxious and hankering to see that beauty, hear that flute. So this is very helpful in our Krishna consciousness. When I was about 10 or 12, maybe something like that, pretty young, maybe the hormones were just kicking in, maybe 11 or 12, something like that. And I've got this magazine of this picture of this most handsome man. He was leaning against a car. He had just the right sideburns. Of course, that was big at that time. And he would just like, I went head over heels over him, just looking at his picture. I never met him, never knew anything about him. But I kept that picture, and I would meditate on this picture. Boy, if I just could have him, you know. And this actually was my meditation. I even remember his name, Gardner McKay. I mean, I wish I didn't remember it. But anyway, this is how we should feel and be captivated by Krishna, by hearing, by seeing the deity, somehow or other situate ourselves so that we are meditating on especially the beauty. I mean, all there was this picture of this guy, you know, and probably in his best day. Now he's probably just a bunch of ashes somewhere. But Krishna's beauty is always there. It's always can be relished. Whenever we go around, you know, travel, we always want to go to the temple to see the deity, right? We don't want to miss out on seeing the deity. So this puts an impression in our mind. All these kids coming by here, hopefully they'll remember one thing they saw today in the deities. When we had the ashram, sometimes we'd go back and during breakfast we'd have a little quiz. Okay, who can remember something that so-and-so wore? What do you have in his hand? And we would see who really was attentive. And some girls really would meditate. And so this is can be a saving grace for us that we have Krishna to meditate on, especially his beauty. Even the demigods are supposed to be the most handsome and beautiful, the wives of the most beautiful and the demigods. And but they worship Krishna. Here it said that even Lord Shiva and everything, they worship Krishna because he's a possessor of all these qualities. Especially beauty. The wives, if they were to see Mrs. Universe, whoever she is this year, or Mrs. America, they would say, their comment is that it looks like a frog. So that's what the most beautiful woman in the world is, looks like a frog compared to their beauty. And those people, those demigods, are worshiping Krishna. So can you imagine how beautiful Krishna is? And he's complete in every way, not just the beauty. So we have to hear more of these qualities that capture our heart. So I'm just going to read a couple of little descriptions of a nice song that we always sing when we have bhajans, because it's a beautiful description of Krishna's beauty. So I'm just going to read a couple of them. This is Navanirada. It's describing the beautiful son of the king of Braj, Krishna, the dark jewel. He whose complexion conquers that of a fresh new rain cloud, who is the best king of paramours, the ocean of ecstatic mellows, whose crown is adorned with a lovely peacock feather and is auspiciously tilted to one side. Just worship Krishna, the dark jewel, the son of the king of Braj. He whose broadly bending eyebrows appear like arched rainbows, whose pure moon-like face belittles millions of ordinary moons, who is endowed with sweet, gentle smiles and pleasant speech, just worship Krishna, the dark jewel, the son of the king of Braja. He whose forehead is surrounded by a fringe of wavy locks, and his consort has many fringes of wavy locks on her face today, who dresses enchantingly just to fascinate the Brajavasis, who is decorated with extraordinary eyes like blue lotus blossoms, just worship Krishna, the dark jewel, of the son of the king of Raja. And he who is adorned with yellow silk embracing his charming hips, just worship Krishna, the dark jewel, the son of the king of Raja. And it goes on and on about the soles of his feet and his earlobes with shark-shaped earrings, his graceful form, and it goes on and on and on and on. So this is a little bit of the beauty of Krishna. So Kali Yuga, it's a very heavy influence, but lo and behold, although Krishna has disappeared from the planet, Lord Chaitanya appeared. Out of his mercy, just 500 years ago, Lord Chaitanya, with so many wonderful qualities and beauty,
incomparable beauty and mercy and compassion has come to also exhibit his opulences so that we can become attracted to him. And of course, he's brought Krishna again in the form of the holy name that is also the reservoir of all those qualities. By just hearing the holy name, it can capture our heart and transform our consciousness so that we can meditate on Krishna no matter where we are or what we're doing. The holy name can follow us here. So we should, as much as possible, take advantage of that hearing. And in that way, we can humble ourselves and appreciate Krishna, his mercy and his opulences. And then our pride will be lessened, and we'll be able to relish even more without offenses the holy name, and relish more and more our position of just being that humble servant. I know after hearing some of these qualities, especially how he, I think the last little bit says that he's maintaining all the affairs of the creation at the same time he's doing this and the same time he's doing that, multitasking. And sometimes I get very proud because I like to multitask. I like to do a lot of different things at one time. And I think, oh, I'm so wonderful. And then you hear this and you go, oh my gosh. I'm just a little ant multitasking compared to Krishna doing the whole universe. What less with in everyone's heart in this room, he's figuring out what for you to do today, and he's figuring out how to satisfy all your desires. So there's a nice description of this, and also in the Shirsha Upanishad. Such a person must factually know the greatest of all, the personality of Godhead, was unembodied, omniscient, beyond reproach, without veins, pure and uncontaminated, the self-sufficient philosopher who has been fulfilling everyone's desire since time immemorial. So he's doing all those things, and at the same time, he knows everyone's desire, and he's trying to fulfill them, especially for those who want to get closer to him. So it's not surprising that Dharma is lamenting. And it's also not surprising that we lamented when Srila Prabhupada left the planet, because Prabhupada, also being the representative of Krishna, had many of these qualities. And we felt very much bereft. But at the same time, Krishna entered Srila Prabhupada's qualities to be able to write all these books and these descriptions, and had the ability to come here and enliven us and to find out who Krishna is and to expose Krishna's glories all over the world. So yes, we lamented, but at the same time, he's left these books for us to study. He's left this process for us to take part in, to cleanse our senses and our minds so we can also have that privilege and that favor that Krishna gives to his pure devotee to see him face to face. And this is our challenge in this lifetime, to give that back, that debt of being his thief, of taking so many things from him for so long, but now giving it back. And in the same time, amazing love, Krishna will give us that favor of his darshan. So this is the importance of these books, that we give them out and share this, just like Prabhupada shared it. I was fortunate to be able to go out to El Paso Rath Yatra. They asked me to help cook for it. And it's a little teeny tiny center. Someone has some worship in their home. But they gathered a lot of devotees, hundreds of devotees, and we gathered there. And it was really a wonderful Rath Yatra. And I hadn't been, out distributing books ever since the pandemic, probably. And I got to be at the book table and to see the appreciation of these books and Krishna. They even had the big old Krishna books, big silver ones. And people were taking them like crazy. They wanted to know who Krishna was. And people were going home with literally stacks of books and thanking us so much. He said, I wasn't going to come, but I'm so glad I came. Now I have all these books to read. And they were just thirsty for Krishna. Everyone is, because they're all part of Krishna. and they're all beautiful people. All these people are so beautiful, so simple-minded. They were willing to accept Krishna right off the bat. No arguments, nothing, no challenges. Tell me more, tell me more. So it's to our benefit to be part of this movement and to benefit others. So as much as we can do to serve Srila Prabhupada by distributing this mercy and tell other people about who God really is and what we should be doing to please Him. So maybe someone has some comments or questions. Yes, sir.
I think in the purport somewhere it says that the material world is real, and I have an ongoing inability to really fully understand the nature of the material world. So could you explain in what way is the material world illusory, and in what way is it real?
Prabhupada definitely,
Prabhupada
definitely confirmed that it is real, but he said it's temporary. So illusory, he says over and over again that it's temporary. So when we're using, in bhakti, we're using our spiritual senses and we're converting the matter to spirit, we're offering it to Krishna, it regains that spiritual quality and it becomes real, real. But it is a real material thing. It's Krishna's energy, but it's his lesser energy. It's his temporary energy. But we can convert matter to spirit by putting it in the fire of devotion. So we are also, in this body, but like the pure devotee's body is considered spiritual because it's totally in that fire of devotion. So it's the nature of how we use it. It is temporary, but it can be used in Krishna's eternal service and become spiritual. So, that's the difference between matter and spirit in a very simple explanation. Yes, back there.
Thank you, that was a nice explanation of that. You said Krishna leaves at the end of Dwapara Yuga, and then you said Lord Chaitanya comes and the holy name comes. But that's just our Kali Yuga, once in a day of Brahma. I was just wondering what happens in other Kali Yugas, if you know, if you hadn't read anywhere.
I hope I'm not around to find out. That's all I can say. And I don't remember the other Kali Yugas I was in. So, Krishna does appear, once in life of Brahma or something like that. He doesn't come very often. Lord Chaitanya is also, this is a rare opportunity, only 500 years ago. I wouldn't worry about it. Hopefully you're not going to be around. And we should just take advantage. I'm sorry, I don't have any other explanation for that, unless someone knows.
It's in the Navodita Mahatma, has some hint of that.
A hint? Okay, what's the hint?
In Kali Yuga, there is a Golden Narayan.
A Golden Narayan?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that gives love of Godhead. But this love of Godhead, he braided. Holy name is there in every Kali Yuga, but every Kali Yuga holy name does not have a braided or, the braiding of the, with the love of Godhead, that is not there. It's a big difference.
Yeah, Lord Chaitanya is the most merciful. He's given us this whole complete process where we can achieve that. So, let's not wait around to find out. What?
When you take the most beautiful girl, Prabhupada said, to heaven, to the heavenly girl, she looks like ugly frog. What does that mean? Does ugly frog mean?
What's it?
No, he said ugly frog.
I said a frog. Have you ever looked at a frog close up? They're really ugly. I mean, what's that fairy tale where you have to kiss
cute.
A frog?
He said it looks cute.
The frog looks cute?
He said,
What's the fairy tale where you have to kiss a frog? It was when someone had to kiss a frog in a fairy tale. I thought, God, I'm glad I was.
The Prince and the Frog.
The Prince of, anyway, that would be like the worst experience. Anyway, the next frog I find, I'll bring to you. You can see how much you like it. Anyway, yeah, we think we're so good looking. Just wait a few years, and then you look like an old frog. It's even worse. Okay, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.